On Motzei Shabbos, last Motzei Shabbos, past Saturday night, I had the schus of joining a few Jews, many Jews, in a small Beit Knesset in a small shul near my house, where we had a atzer tefillah, which was called. It was called a get-together for davening for the Eurovision event that took place on Motzei Shabbos, but the hachana, the preparation, was done on Shabbos. And therefore, the Gedolim said, various Gedolim said, that it would be pertinent for the Jews to go and daven as a, what to call a protest, as a protest for the Chil Shabbos, whatever is going on, and this Eurovision event. Now, being at this Atzer Tefillah, at Chatzot, 12:35 it was in the shul, pretty exhausted from Shabbos day, but pushing myself a little bit to go to the Atzer Tefillah to daven. At that moment I was davening, we were saying Tehillim, it was like Slichos. Somebody had a shofar. There was they were saying the Yigin Lamidos. They were saying various Prophim of Tehillim. All of these things were going on. And some guys I see in your faces are thinking, wow, you know, a fanatic rabbi joining a bunch of fanatics. Now, at the time when I was standing there, I felt a mixture of pride and sadness. I want to explain why. And I want to also tie this in to L'g B'Omer. Just to differentiate, whatever you saw on the news was going around, what I saw in Yeshiva World and others, that is not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, crazy people running around, you know, in the streets and holding, you know, chilon and ransom and their cars and beating them. That's not what I'm talking about at all. So I want to make that very, very clear. I'm talking about a bunch of Jews who just go into a Beit Knesset without any fanfare or no cameras, no nothing, just going and davening and saying Tehillim on behalf of their brethren. So what was the sadness that I was feeling, and what was the pride that I was feeling at that moment in time? So I want to explain it. I want to explain what this has to do with the Shem Bar Yochai and the upcoming Chag of L'g B'Omer. There's a famous Medrash in Rus I've spoken about before. I'm just going to use a keto, just quote a few lines of it, which hopefully bring this point across. Amar B'Yisai by Miriam. Ba Kosov, we're talking about in Rus, Ba Lam Decha, Shem Adam Osa Mitzvah Yasena B'Levav Shalem. If a person does a mitzvah, he should try to do the mitzvah in its entirety, full force. If Reuven only knew that he would be written about in the Torah, that he would save Yosef, he would have brought Yosef back out of the pit, and would have put him on his shoulders, and had a whole parade bringing Yosef back to his father Yaakov. Same thing for Aaron, and the same thing for Boaz, skipping a few lines. If he knew that he would be written up in Megillas Rus for having fed a maidservant a few cookies, he would have fed her Tosar Agalos. He would have given fattened calves. All these things, the Medrash goes, it gives different examples of different characters in the Tanakh of how they know, would they have known what their actions were really about, then they would have done it so much greater. So what are we talking about? We're talking about Reuven, we're talking about Boaz, that if they knew that they were written up in the paper, so then they would have done their actions a little bit better. And we're talking about tzaddikim here. We would assume that they have full kavanah and why they're doing things. They're not doing it because they're getting accolades. They're not doing it because they're getting written up in the paper. So what's the pshat in this? What's the pshat in this medrash? The medrash actually ends off very interestingly in saying that don't make the mistake. The medrash ends off and says, If an Adam osa mitzvah, navi kos v'achshav, kesh Adam osa mitzvah, mi kos. So a person might think to himself, well, okay, Reuven, he had somebody write about him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe to write the Torah, and he wrote the Torah, and Reuven's written up, and Boaz and Megillas Rus, and Aaron in the Torah. So us, though, we're not going to have anybody written Nobody's being written up about us. So why do we have to strive to do such great actions? Who's going to write about me? Eliyahu Kosu, Melech HaMashiach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kosu Meideyem, as it's written, as Nidru Yer Hashem Yishorei Eicher, the Pasuk in Malachi, last Navi in Tanakh. Right? Saying that a person that don't think Chas V'Shalom, that your actions are not going to account because you're not written in the Bible, because you're not in Tanakh. Right? So who cares? Who am I? I'm a little kid in Torah Shraga, Talmud in Torah Shraga. What significance are my actions going to have? On that, the Medrash ends and tells you that's absolutely incorrect. That no, our actions are going to be written up, much like Aaron, much like Reuven, much like Boaz, because they have a koach, they have an ability to affect other people around them. When we tap into our Kedusha, we have unlimited potential. Now, starting tomorrow night, already now, there, as Rabbi Olshan said, there are hundreds of thousands of people who are flocking over to Meron, as we speak now, already preparing to go to the Kever, to go to the Tzion. Now why? What's so special about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in particular? There are many Tanayim buried all over in the Tveria area, in the Galil, here, in Tveria. Why do we have to go? Why is everybody going flocking specifically to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? What's so special about him? So I think one of the answers could be is that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and I'll bring a few proofs to this, is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was somebody who was able to see the potential in every single Jew. He was able to see that there was something special about every Yid, no matter where they were in life. They could have been on the highest darga, they could have been mayor, they could have been different Tanayim, and he would see great things about them, Eliezer, his son, but it wasn't true, it wasn't about that. It was about that he was able to see that there was potential in every Yid, that they, whatever action that they were going to be able to do, they could do great things in this world for Klal Yisrael and for the world in its entirety. And I think maybe that's the shot the Gemara brings, the famous story of how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai got in trouble. How did he get to the cave in the first place? Why did he spend 12 years in a cave eating carob the whole, and drinking some water from a ravine? Where did it come from? Why did he have to hide? So the Gemara in Shabbos speaks about how there was a conversation going. There was a Moser who told on him. The conversation went as follows. They were discussing what would the Romans get, what schar are they going to get for all of the roads and the bridges that they built? What was their intent? And what's going to happen by Acharei Hayom? Are they going to get schar or not? So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said that there's no way. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai was one who said that they were going to get schar. Right? They're going to get schar for what they did. They built great, great roads, they helped society, and eventually they helped the Jews. People can travel, people can go and learn, people can go and teach, great things. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said they're not going to get schar for that. Why? Because there's no way that they didn't intend for any good to come out of this. There's no way that they had any good intention of what the roads that they were building, the bridges they were going to build. And he actually got in trouble for that. They told the Roman government, and then he had to flee. What's shot in this? Why was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai so abstinent? Why was he so against this idea that the Romans could have had good intentions when they built the roads and they built the bridges? What's the significance of this? So I think it has to do with this idea of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai understanding that the potential of a Yid, the potential of a Jew, is so, so much greater than everything else in the world, than everybody else in the world. Because a Jew, a Yid, is able to be Mekadesh the Chol. Only a Jew can think about the idea that if I have something physical, I can make that spiritual. We have a marriage. Everybody knows what happens when Shuli just described beautifully, right? What happens in a marriage, right? We all know what happens in a marriage. But the marriage itself starts off called Kiddushin. Because we as Jews are able to be Mekadish Lechol. We have that ability. When we eat something and we make a bracha, we're Mekadish the food that we eat. A goy, a non-Jew, can't understand this. Rav Shimon Chai was saying, a non-Jew, the Romans, they can't understand that from something physical is going to become something great spiritually. We could create spirituality from physicality. Only a Yid is able to do that. Rav Shimon Chai was able to see that, and that's what we celebrate. And that's why, I think, all different types of Jews come to Meron, and they're all dancing together. It's probably the only time in the entire year, I would say for sure, the only time that you could have a guy with a skinhead with a guy with long payas and a chassid from Meir Sharim and a chiloni where they would kill each other in the streets in Yerushalayim. But for some reason, when they get to Meron, They're able to dance together. Nobody asks any questions where you're from, what you believe in, what political party you're part of. Why? Because there's something that connects them all, which is Rishon Bar Yochai. Everybody's able to see that somebody that's other Jew has an unbelievable koach, that he could do very, very, a lot of good things with his maaseh, even small maaseh, even small actions. Rishon Bar Yochai, a few statements just to prove this point. Rishon Bar Yochai explains in this week's parasha, actually, the Zohar, so quoted, not that I ever read the Zohar, actually was once on a bus with Yaakov Hillel Shlita, going to Meron on Lag BaOmer about 15 years ago. And it was me and a friend of mine, and I slept along with a friend of mine who knew Rav Yaakov Hillel Shlita. And I promise you, we got on the bus in Shmuel Novi, a street next to my house. And as soon as we got on the bus, it was like Talmidim of Rav Yaakov Hillel Shlita, which they were like 50s and 60-year-old men, still Talmidim of Yaakov Hillel. He got onto the microphone as soon as we left, and he started teaching Zohar. And I didn't understand, it was one word, and I understand Hebrew, and my Hebrew is okay. I didn't understand one word. He literally talked from the beginning, as soon as we left, until we got to the Tzion. It was like 2.5 hours, or 3 hours straight of just teaching the Zohar. Anyway, so I'm not claiming to be a maven b'chlal, but I did see quoted in this week's parasha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, lo ma'asim lo ga'altim lo samah, I will never despise you. And the Rishon Bar Yochai brings in Medrash, he says, in the Zohar, he says, that what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will never be disgusted to us? He gives a mashal. He says that a woman who's living near a tannery is where they tan hides, and it smells, a terrible stench. And she's living there, but her husband, her chazan, who wants to court her, wants to marry her, is willing to live next to the tannery no matter how bad it smells. Why? Because he's an absolute infatuation with the woman. So much so, that Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that Rishon Bar Yochai says, Kadosh Baruch Hu is the same way. No matter where you are, no matter how most, how disgusting you are, I'm going to come live with you, wherever you are. I'm going to always be able to be with you. And that's exactly what Rishon Bar Yochai was all about. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, he has one famous sheet that Rishon Bar Yochai says, that a Bensora Mora lo haya velo nivra. Bensora Mora never existed. What's a Bensora Mora? Bensora Mora is a kid who we call nowadays, you know, goes a little bit off. And basically, we kill him because we don't want him to get any worse later on. Rishon Bar Yochai says, lo haya velo nivra. Never could have happened. Why? Because Rishon Bar Yochai believes so much in a yid, he says it's impossible to say that that a guy who goes down and falls all the way down, he's never going to be able to come back up. He's never going to be able to connect back to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Can't be. Kadosh Baruch Hu finds the yid wherever they are and he shoves them back up. So this, it can't be that the Torah would be unequivocal and say for sure this kid is going to not make it. He's involved in all these taivas. He's involved in all this physicality. He's not going to be able to come back ever. Rishon Bar Yochai couldn't believe that. So he says, lo haya velo nivra. Back to the Eurovision. So what was so sad? What was I sad about and what was I proud about? And that Motzei Shabbos, the last Motzei Shabbos. So I was sad about this idea that there could be a Yidden, there could be Jews who feel that in order to be proud as Jews, they have to do something secular. We're all about, a Yid is all about how we're proud of the fact that we can be Mekadesh B'chol. It's the opposite. Not that we take a koach that we have. If somebody has a beautiful voice, a talent, a beautiful voice, the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him that talent, the saddest thing is for a yid to go and think that he has to impress the goyim and look proud in the eyes of goyim, and that's what's going to make him successful. That's sad. That's pathetic. Rather, a person who can realize that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave himself a talent of a beautiful voice, and he could go and inspire other Jews to become closer to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is the most beautiful thing in the world. That's the biggest Kiddush Hashem. But a Chil Hashem is for a person to go and partake in something which all of the Rabbanim, where I don't care if the rabbi was wearing a black hat, I don't care if the rabbi, the gadol was wearing a kippah surga, every single person, every single Rav unequivocally spoke out against this event. Because forgetting about the Chil Shabbos Shabbo, but it's also the fact that it's not sanua, it's not modest, it's not a modest thing to do. And the way we become close, the way we become respected, and this is true throughout life, the way you become respected in wherever you're going, college or in yeshiva, is when you're doing the correct thing, when you're being the Kaddish Shem Shemayim. Nobody respects a person who kowtows to the styles of the time. And that's what we were doing here as a nation. Unfortunately, that's what we're doing in Eretz Yisrael by hosting such an event. It's the exact opposite of what we want to do. So when I was sitting on Motzei Shabbos davening, saying the Yigam Amidos, I had in mind that I was davening for this guy. I mean, was obviously, you know, he was not very successful. He was 23 out of 26. So doesn't say so much for him. But listen, at the end of the day, what saddened me is the fact that he wasn't able to tap into what his real potential as a Yid is. And that's, unfortunately, we see that very, very often. And that's the exact opposite of what Rav Shimon bar Yochai would want. Shimon bar Yochai sees, I don't blame him. He's not a bad person. It's just sad. So it reminds me of a beautiful Torah by Rav Shimon Schwab, Zatzal, by Yaakov and Esav. The pasuk says, "Vayaretz Esav the krasu and Yaakov ben Esav, Vayaretz Esav the krasu v'yachabkeyu, v'yipalat tzavara v'yishakeyu v'yivku." That moment in time when Esav and Yaakov met for the first time after all those years of hate, pent up hate that Esav had for Yaakov, and Yaakov was scared for his life and for the life of his family. So Yaakov prostrated himself before he met Esav, thinking that this could be the end. He literally didn't know what was going to be. But what happened? A nes happened, literally a nes, that Esav was overcome with emotion by Yipal at Tzavarav, that he fell on the shoulder of Yaakov, by Yishakehu, plural, they kissed each other, by Yivku, also plural, that they cried. By Yivku means that they both cried. Now, I could ask you, Esav cried, I understand why Esav would cry. Why would Esav cry at that moment in time? Because what did he see? Esav saw in himself that he was pathetic. He had nothing. He had no nachas, right? His kids were all, murderers, whatever, gallivanting around. And then he sees his brother, right, with a beautiful family, and beautiful nachas, and beautiful children. He has everything. And that made Esav cry. But I ask you, why did Yaakov cry? What was Yaakov crying about? Yaakov should be happy. Oh, look at me. I was a success. And his life, the way he chose, was not. So he should pat himself on the back. He should be happy. So Shrab Zatzal says no. Vayivku means that Yaakov cried because he saw how pathetic Esav was. Because he saw that there was so much potential in an Esav, and that was gone. That was lost. Flushed down the toilet forever. Esav had so much potential in himself, and that was lost. Because he wasn't able to hone in on what the goal of life was. He wasn't to hone in on his potential and develop his potential. So that made Yaakov cry. I think about that. I was thinking about that in Moshe Shabbos, this vort of Shimon Schwab. It's a beautiful vort. And it really brings home our job here. And that brings home what saddened me about Shabbos / Moshe Shabbos. Is that there's so much potential that we have as Yidden, as Jews. And as we saw in the Medrash Rabbah over here by Rus, that every single action that we do is recorded, not because, you know, we're a mashkiach over here, you know, looking to see who can we kick out, who can we not kick out, you know, who do we have to test, who do we not have to test. We're not talking about that. Everything was recorded because it means so much. Because when we go to the Beis Medrash and we learn, it means so much to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we recognize the talent that we have and we use it to influence others, it means so much to the Kaddish Baruch Hu. If I have a good voice and I bring guys together to sing Shiras and Tishbachos to the Kaddish Baruch Hu, it means so much to Hashem. And when you do the opposite, it saddens the Kaddish Baruch Hu, but you know what? It should also sadden us. And that's what made me proud at the same time. Because no other nation in the world would care about what somebody else is doing. We don't believe in the mantra of live and let live. That's not what we believe in. We try to influence positively, not in a negative way, other people to do what's right. And when we know that we cannot influence them, when we know that it's just not within our abilities to influence them, so then we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say, I can't do anything right now, but what one thing I can do is I can daven for my fellow Yid. That's one thing I can do. I'm not going to go to the streets with protests. You know, I'm not going to stop cars and throw rocks and do all these things and scream at them. And obviously, that's not going to do anything. That's posh. That's obvious. That's not what we're about. But what we are about is a bunch of Yidden who can get together and feel bad that other people are not realizing their potential. Like Rav Shimon bar Yochai. That's what Rav Shimon bar Yochai was all about. That's what we celebrate on Meirom. It reminds me of the story. I mean, I guess that's Chatalia and the Maskir Hayom. I remember when I was a senior in high school, I um, We had a graduation. After graduation, we had a celebration that we graduated. There wasn't a mechitza there. So I had a very close friend who was very influential in my life. Until now, he was a little bit more from than I was. He went to a yeshiva called Yeshiva Far Akwe. I went to a different yeshiva on the other side of town. So if you want to call it that. But we celebrated. We celebrated the fact that we had a graduation party. And my friend, for weeks before that, was trying to convince me not to go. I said to him, Ari, you know, it's all my friends that I grew up with. You know, this is our last time before we go to Israel. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen after that. Maybe I'm going to have, you know, get religious and then go shana bet. And then all these things. Who knows what's going to be? The world's going to end. I might as well have my fun right now. I remember this happening. It's clear. I remember this. So he's pleading with me. And I didn't listen. I went, obviously. And not that I did anything bad. It was nothing terrible. Rabbi David actually remembers. When I was in ninth grade, it has nothing to do with anything, but when I was in ninth grade, we spent Shabbos together in the Humowak Hotel. I'll try to forget that. But I was there. I remember being there.
I recall.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I recall.
Good. I don't think you would have hired me. So we had this graduation party. My friend Ari, he obviously didn't go. He wasn't in the school. But I remember the next day he called me up. And he says to me, what did you do last night? He says to me what I did. I said, I went to the party. Fine. I said to him, what did you do? He said, I sat the whole night. Is that crazy? The guy sat the whole night saying to him, for not me, me and a few friends, that he wanted to make sure that we steered clear of any trouble. And that was his focus. And that's what a yid is all about. A yid is all about that you care about what somebody else is doing. Somebody's mechal Shabbos in Tel Aviv, it has to hurt you in Yerushalayim. And it doesn't mean that you scream at them. It doesn't mean that they're bad people. But it does mean that you care for them and you daven for them and you hope that whatever's going on in Shamayim, that unfortunately if there would be a gzar din against us in Shamayim, so we hopefully would be helping out in our own way. That's what we're about. Seeing our potential. Pasuk in Mishlei says, "Shev yipol tzaddik v'kam rishon yikashelu b'ra." That a tzaddik is able to fall. This is what we believe in. You're able to fall. You could fall seven. All the Farshim say it's lav davka seven. Many times a person can fall and he can come right back. The Kodesh Baruch Hu believes in you. However, rishon yikashelu b'ra. The rishon falter b'ra in wickedness. Now, why are they called the rishon? The guy who falls and doesn't get back up, he's a rasha. Because he can't get back up. Why is he a rasha? Because he can't get back up. The tzaddik, I understand. The tzaddik, somebody is able to go. He falls down. He picks himself back up. He believes in himself. He believes, like we said, that his ma'asim, his actions have a lot of potential. Why is the guy who can't get back up? Why is he called a rasha? A rasha, usually in my mind, is somebody that does something that's wicked because you know he's a wicked person through and through. But this guy that realizes that he has to get up, but he can't get back up. Why? Why is he a rasha? I forgot who says this, but the idea is that because a rasha is a person who doesn't realize that he has potential. How could you squander entire lifetime that you have, where every single moment, you know, we all know the famous mashal, he's thrown into the king's treasure home for 5 minutes. Right? I just said one of the kids Divrei Torah they brought home. They had this beautiful cartoon. I actually want to print it out and give it to you guys. Where you have a guy that's diamonds all over the floor, right, and he's standing there, he's 5 minutes in the otsar, in the treasure chest of the king, and then you have like five people around him serving him cake and pizza and giving him different things, and he's being distracted for those 5 minutes where the diamonds are literally all around him, right? And then the time's up and he loses, and he looks back at himself and he says, oh, I had so much potential, I could have picked up so many diamonds, and I left it all. So Russia is somebody doesn't realize that he has that potential. He could fall. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai understood that. But you got to be able to understand that you can pick yourself back up and you can reconnect to a Kodesh Baruch. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, Rabbi Shimon maybe tell me afterwards, that maybe this is the pshat also, that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when he left the cave, right, after 12 years, the Bas Kol, Eliyahu Novi came and told him that he can leave now. So he left. And what does the Maisa? The Maisa says he saw somebody working. How could you work and you're wasting your life and you're osik b'shah achas? And you leave the chayishah. You leave eternity. Why aren't you sitting and learning? What are you doing working? Right? And he had to go back. He was summoned back into the caves. You can't live in this world like that. Then he comes out. And what does he see? After he spends some time there, he gets the musr, he realizes that not everybody could be learning all day, some people have to work. He comes out of the cave again, and he sees a yid with two myrtle branches, two hadassim. And he says to the yid, he says, what is this? So he says, one's for shomer, one for zachor, I'm doing it l'kavod Shabbos, I'm bringing these myrtle branches l'kavod Shabbos, which smell good l'kavod Shabbos. One for zachor, one for shomer. And then he couldn't believe that a yid was doing this. He was so proud, it was unbelievable. And then he was able to leave. He's able to go back into the world. What's pshat now? Why is he able to go back into the world? So maybe this is the pshat, is that he understood shimbar chayla shitaso, that he understood that a yid his koach is to be able to take what's chol and bring it to kodesh. A myrtle branch has no significance, but if you make it the kavod Shabbos, it has a lot of significance. Right, so he understood now that you don't have to be sitting and learning all day to be mekadesh your life. You could go out and do things and have a job and do great things and be mekadesh through that. But you have to be mekadesh your life with it. You can't do things that are anti-Torah, antithetical to what the Torah is teaching us. And the last message of Lag BaOmer is to never give up. Think about this for a second. It's unbelievable cheshbon. 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva passed away. Can you imagine? All of them could have been Tanayim, right? Like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who were the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So they all, the Stama, were probably on that level. So you imagine how big our Gemaras would be if they remained, remained around. How many more Shitot, how many more opinions we would have. 24,000 people lost. That is 727 funerals each day that Rabbi Akiva had to be busy with. 727 funerals each day. You would think that he would throw in the towel, Rabbi Akiva, like, I'm not such a good Rebbe. I mean, I mess up, but like, I can't, you know, like, my Talmidim haven't, gone off because of me, Baruch Hashem, Blei Ein Hara, so far. Right? You would think that Rabbi Akiva would throw in the towel, like, come on, you gotta retire. 727 Talmidim dying every single day because they couldn't respect each other, that's cause for retirement. But no, he didn't. He gets back up and he goes back. He has five Talmidim. And through those five Talmidim, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, that's what we're celebrating, is one of them. And all of his Torahs, Zohar, and everything else that he brought to us, that's what we celebrate on Lag BaOmer. We're celebrating the fact that a person is able to go back up on, is able to dust himself off, and be able to go and affect an entire world with five Talmidim. And then that's all the Gemaras that we have today. All the Torah that we have today is from those five Talmidim. So imagine all the things that if you just multiply those five, right, 24,000, it's amazing loss of Torah. Imagine for a second a professor who worked for 10 years on curing cancer. And in the days of old, but he didn't have internet, right? So he has all of his study, all of his work, cure for cancer in his briefcase. And he's flying to Europe for some convention. He's going to present his cure for cancer. And the plane goes down, right? Everything's lost. What plane? I mean, whatever. His bag gets lost, right? And he lost everything. He's finished. His career is over. He's not getting. He's done. That's not the way the Torah works. The Torah works is that a person is able to come back, and we have to recognize in ourselves. And that was again what was said about the Eurovision event is the fact that there are people out there that don't recognize how much potential they could have. And Mirza Hashem, we should learn the lessons of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, learn the lessons and mistakes of others. The Medrash in Rus over there. By how the Gedolim, Reuven, Boaz also saw and lamented the fact that they didn't do more. So we have their lessons to learn from. We could do more, Mr. Shem. We will have a good day.